The work from Working home was from inside home. You all along.
Welcome to Geeks Without God with Nick Glover, Tim Wick, and Molly Glover.
We're geeks without God. We're geeks without God. We don't recognize moral authority. We don't accept divine superiority. We're geeks without God.
This week on Geeks Without God, our guest is Christopher Jones. He returns to talk about moving out to California to work on Young Justice, which he can't talk about.
We're geeks without God. We're geeks without God. We're geeks without God.
Hi, welcome to Geeks Without God. I'm your host, Nick Glover. I'm joined, as always, by my co-host, Molly Glover.
Hi, I'm Molly Glover.
And Tim Wick.
Hi, I'm Tim Wick.
And this week, our guest is a friend of the show, returning guest, Christopher Jones.
Hi, Christopher Jones.
Hello.
Wow. That made for great video. Bummer, a lot of Patreon.
There was a long, unexplained pause for majority of the audience. Only listening to the audio.
The Patreon supporters who get to watch this on video are delighted.
the comical slow turn.
We are charming.
Staple of comedy.
So for those that aren't familiar with you, you're a comic artist. Yes. You are one of the founders of the local convention Convergence, which is our podcast birthday.
Creator of Connie.
Creator of the Connie mascot for that convention. Too. And most recently, I'm sure I'm leaving out some other amazing stuff, but most recently you've moved from Minnesota to LA to expand your horizons a little bit career-wise.
Yeah. Is that a cue to explain what I'm doing?
It is, yeah.
I have moved to LA where I'm working for Warner Brothers Animation on the new season of Young Justice, which is... exciting as a career move, is exciting as someone who has been involved with the Young Justice franchise for many years, having drawn several issues of the tie-in comic series, which is more relevant and canonical than most tie-in media tends to be. So I already felt very connected to it and knew several of the creators, but now I get to be a part of the actual production of the show, which is really exciting. And, you know, of course, I moved out here excited that I was going to be going back to, you know, instead of like drawing comics in solitude in my apartment, I was going back into a studio workspace and meeting all these exciting people. And I found an apartment that strategically was a 12-minute drive from the studio, so I wouldn't have a huge, long L.A. commute every day back and forth. And now here I am working from home in solitude.
So I guess you're saying you're not taking a lot of hikes in LA?
No. And I'm of the mindset, like, I might have been paying like the closest attention to when things are opening and closing as people are reacting withdrawing with the rise and fall of the infection rates. Because I am not going to be one of the early adopters out there, you know, when they say, oh, well, we've decided to open this up. Like, well, that may be a terrible idea. I'm just going to sit here in my apartment and listen to the news for a couple of weeks.
Like the first hover car. I'm going to let you guys drive.
Yeah. I mean, as much as I really, really would love to get out and do things and have things be open, I can wait a little bit to hear how that's going before I venture out myself.
Are you able to get good taco delivery?
I've been making some use of food delivery. I'm sorry to say that the majority of the time when I've ordered anything resembling Mexican food, it's just been Taco Bell.
All right. Well, when you can.
I unfortunately did not have as much opportunity as I would like to really explore LA and find the good places before things started to close down. Whether that's good restaurants to go to or theaters or anything else. I got to go to one live production of a show, which was great, but I haven't even seen a movie out here yet.
It's crazy.
And you won't for a while.
No, yeah. And I won't for a while because, you know, I was just sort of getting acclimated. You know, I first got out here and I'd spent all my money on the move. I just barely was able to scrape by to do the move.
Yeah.
And then I was starting the new job and that just kind of ate up all my bandwidth.
Yeah.
And then just as I was getting to the point where it's like, you know, I don't care if I'm not finding someone to go see a show with or do something with. It's like, even if I have to go by myself, which I have a hard time motivating myself to do, I'm much more of a go to a movie with a friend as opposed mm-hmm. to by my own self. Just as I was getting to the point where, like, I don't care if I can't find anyone, I'm going to go on my own and explore, COVID happened.
Oh, right. My gosh, yeah.
So, yeah, I've been in, people ask, so how is LA treating you? I'm like, my apartment is fine.
It sounds so surreal.
Yeah, it is. But, I mean, I'm hugely grateful to not only still be employed, because I've had friends that, you know, lost jobs during this. I had friends who were out of work and looking for a job when this hit. So, you know, you're starting in a hole and have no pay to climb out. So I'm really grateful for that, but it's a job that I really love doing and enjoy doing. And, like, so people ask how I'm doing. I'm like, thank goodness for the job, because that's what's keeping me sane. I have a job I actually love doing.
What is your job?
So I'm a storyboard revisionist, and in very rough terms, what that means is when you are creating animation, you start with a script. They will, you know, be working up designs for characters and locations and things like that. And then at some point it goes to have the storyboards created. And like everything in TV and film production, things go through revision upon revision upon revision. So there's the initial pass at storyboards. They'll do a rough pass to get the overall direction kind of locked down, and they'll do a clean pass where the drawings are a little tighter. But then as it goes through a series of revisions with both the director of the episode and the producers of the show chiming in with changes they'd like to see made, it's someone with my job title who works with them to make those changes, because the original storyboard artists who drew the first version have moved on to the next episode in the chain.
Sure,
so
sure.
Basically, there's been very few instances where I'm drawing anything from scratch. It's mostly making changes to something that's already there. And unfortunately, to everyone who understands non-disclosure agreements, that's about the absolute limit of what I can say about what I'm working on.
For sure.
Generically speaking, it's hugely exciting to feel like I'm on the inside now. Feel like, after having had a connection to this and a little bit of insider knowledge just because of working creatively in this universe with the same people that were doing the show, to now be actually helping make it is amazing.
Do you find yourself rewatching the previous seasons to just kind of like soak in it, as it were, like while you're working, or do you have a better time getting inspired other places?
My guilty pleasure, because I don't have the opportunity to like have friends over and watch stuff, is I've gotten addicted to reaction videos. Which, you know, it's a stranger, but you're getting to see somebody react as a first time viewer to something, which not only is it really fascinating to see how they respond to something. I mean, I watched all the Young Justice episodes at least already knowing the source material. I know who these characters are from the comics. Sure. So the Young Justice version of them may be different in a surprising way, and the specific storyline may be surprising. But when a character like G. Gordon Godfrey shows up, I know who that is.
Yeah, right. Yeah,
so it's
sure.
great watching people that are experiencing that character for the first time through the show going, what's this guy's problem?
Yeah, granny goodness.
Yeah, and but watching like someone like Godfrey go on his whole like anti-alien rant and being like, yeah, he's not from this planet.
Yeah.
which is just, it's hilarious watching someone discover that. It's great. I'd rather be doing viewing parties with friends as these things come up, but it's fun watching you know, you go through, it's like there are some people where I'm like, oh man, I can't even watch your reaction because you're being an idiot. But you find sure. people that are like, oh, they're smart and they're reacting to stuff the way I do. It's like, I'd hang out with you if I knew you or knew where you live. But
if
yeah,
that so wasn't creepy. Yeah.
some like adult guy is like, Chris Jones wants my address.
That's a little strange. Yeah. But like I said, in these times where, you know, one doesn't have the option of hanging out with people, it's a fun way to revisit stuff that I might get. I'm a little bored just having it on otherwise, but it freshens things up a little bit.
You've had a lot of fan interaction with Young Justice fans, even before this move, career-wise. I one of the things I love about like following you on Twitter or Facebook Uh-oh. Is you post a lot of pictures of people that swing by your booth in costume and say hey, and you get pictures with them and stuff like that. You've had a lot of people come up in Young Justice costumes to be like, oh, fuck, Young Justice comic guy, and like get their picture taken and stuff.
Yeah, I think the extent to which that became a big thing for me had a lot to do with the fact that of the people who had any connection to Young Justice, either they were people that, you know, it was one thing on an animation resume and not necessarily how they branded their convention appearance. A lot of the folks I know involved with the show don't really do conventions. So even though I was at the time the guy drawing the tie-in comic and not somebody involved with the making of the show at all, you know, I ended up getting a lot of attention because I would go to conventions.
You were there.
Young Justice on my banner, and I've got Young Justice original artwork and Young Justice prints. And hey, yeah, I'll talk to you about Young Justice. So yeah, then you get the cosplayers come by, and you know, like just kind of like walking down the aisle, and they would see the banner behind me at the table, and they would just like stop in their tracks, like, "Oh my god!" You know, that was always fun and exciting.
That's awesome.
You know, although every once in a while I'd have the experience of like somebody would be like dressed as a character from the show walking past my table, and I watch them look over and see my banner, and they never break stride, and I'm like, really?
not even a second glance?
No.
Nothing?
Wow. I'm like, crazy. Come on, you're wearing the costume.
Sometimes I gotta pee, Chris, and I'm on a mission.
there you go.
Is the comic, were you working with Greg Weisman on that as well?
Yeah. So when the comic started, for complicated reasons I did not fully understand, DC initially had a couple of other writers, very talented guys, scripting the book. But Greg, who was interested in writing it from the beginning, he wrote like the zero issue, and then he did not write issues 1 through 6. Although all those stories, I think, were either based on outlines from the show, or they were at least very, very firmly coordinated with the show, because the stories are all considered canon. So I think, a lot of the stories for the comic book were based on ideas that were developed as part of the show's narrative continuity and then just never made it into an episode.
Sure.
But then Greg came on himself to script the show, script the comic, starting with issue 7. And so he and I were the regular creative team on the book through the end of the run, which was issue 25.
That's great. So, that's,
yeah.
Yeah.
Go ahead. Yeah.
No, please.
I was going to say, I mentioned earlier, you know, that it's more canonical and a little more significant than a lot of tie-in books. I always describe the phenomenon of, like, you know, Star Trek novels, whatever creative freedom they do or don't have, one thing for sure is by the end of the book, the status quo is preserved and you can't kill anybody off or marry anybody off. You know, everything has to kind of happen seamlessly in between stuff. And while there was a certain amount of that in the comic, because you didn't want the show, you didn't want somebody watching the show and then feel like they've missed a part of the story, and that's because it happened in the comic book. At the same time, the the stories in the comic are considered canon to the extent to which, if you want to get really detail oriented and pay attention to the timestamps that the show used, the timestamps were used in the comic as well, and the narratives thread together. There's actually one episode of the show where Robin's not around and somebody asks where he is. And someone says, oh, he's off doing the dynamic duo thing with Batman. And there's an issue of the comic that has Batman and Robin off doing something on the same calendar date.
Oh, that's
great.
That
episode of the TV show. So, yeah, that kind of made it really fun. What was frustrating at the time was that I would encounter fans at conventions that they stopped and were excited to talk to me because they're huge Young Justice fans, but it was news to them that there even was a tie-in comic, because the phenomenon that was happening was DC, since the comic was based on an animated TV show, insisted that it be branded as one of their all-ages titles.
Mm-hmm.
Sure.
Even though the show was fairly sophisticated and
YA
in tone.
Yeah.
And certainly everyone working on the book creatively didn't want to do anything other than match the tone of the show.
Mm-hmm.
So the kids book label wasn't one we had wanted or asked for, but because we were stuck with it, that limited us to what we could do in the book, because, you know, DC had its very conservative idea of what you can do in a kid's book. But the biggest problem was both in the solicitations, like through the previews catalog, or the way the book was displayed at most retail locations, it wasn't with the other DC superhero titles.
It's in the kids section.
It was with Looney Tunes and Scooby-Doo.
Yeah,
Betty and Archie,
So if you don't think that you're interested in those books, you're never gonna find Young Justice.
You just see the bright colors and you skip right by.
And it was especially maddening during a time when DC had kind of broken out their superhero line into categories. And one of them, which focused on younger superheroes, was called Young Justice. But the Young Justice book wasn't in that category.
God. Oh, yeah. Man.
That drove us crazy.
In terms of like plot and maturity, and I feel like where it fits in terms of like media, I see a lot in common between Young Justice and like Avatar, The Last Airbender, or Legend of Korra. Like there are mature themes, but they don't show mature content. People die, but they never show the violence of death. The serious things are dealt with, though.
Well, I mean, if you watch season 3 Young Justice Outsiders, they're obviously able to get away with a lot more now that they're not on Cartoon Network. But I think the Cartoon Network seasons, the thing that made Young Justice such an amazing show for me, that made me a fan of it even before I got to play in that sandbox, is as much as I was a huge fan of Batman the Animated Series and Superman and Justice League and all those shows, which had great writing and great character-based writing, I've never seen another superhero show that goes as far as Young Justice stuff, as far as each story has lasting ramifications. It affects the characters and their relationships, and you never reset to a status quo. Everything is always evolving forward, and it can change based on any given episode's storyline, which makes everything feel so consequential.
Right.
There's a real sense of drama and risk and meaning to everything. Whereas, you know, if it's just villain of the week and then you're like back to normal and you can watch the episodes in any order, you know, it can still be a fun show, but it's not going to hit you the same way emotionally.
It's not the same level of investment.
Yeah.
It's interesting the way you mentioned about the comic, because honestly, we are Young Justice fans of the show, and I don't think I would have known there was a comic if you and I weren't friends. And we were going to the comic shop like weekly, if not every other week, but it I wouldn't have known. And it's, I don't think there's this kind of this idea out there in any media publishing that like the fans will find it and that marketing doesn't really matter. And I know that like my studio has recently pivoted toward, instead of our marketing just being like, hey, there's a new game, you can buy it now, like actually trying to find ways to actually you know, market something in a way that brings people excitement about it. And I think that's tricky, but it's funny how, like, we were just talking with our friend the other day about Avatar, the Korra, how they moved it around time slots, and then they moved it to online only. And that really, then they were like, oh, the ratings are bad. It's like, well, you moved it around, you know? And so, like, similarly with a comic where it's like, well, the sales are down. It's like, well, you put it in the damn kids section. Like, what do we, you know, what do we do?
Well, in so many of the animation tie-in books, I mean, aside from my not being objective because I've done a lot of work on those, I've always thought that the industry has it backwards. I mean, this isn't just DC. Marvel does this to an extent as well, mm-hmm. where they will do these tie-in books if there's like an animated TV show that they're doing, but they don't promote them. They put artwork on the books that often looks even cartoonier than the TV show does. Mm-hmm. And you know, there are exceptions where, like, the writing was of such quality, the artwork was of such quality, it got a reputation, got a following. The Batman Adventures title mm-hmm. is the example I'm thinking of. But there's so many of those other books, they don't sell great because no one's really trying to sell them to anybody.
There's not commercials for them.
They just put them out there sort of as an obligation. And I don't know if this is 100% true. This was told to me once, and it sounds true, that a big part of the reason why they do those books is because they are aimed at a younger demographic, they can sell advertising space in the books to different advertisers.
Ah, sure.
Which gives them an incentive to do those books, but not a lot of incentive to really invest a lot of money or energy in trying to drive the sales up. I mean, the experience we had with the Young Justice comic was the book, you know, we were having conversations about what we were going to do in the next few storylines. And I was just getting to the point with Greg where we kind of burned through what his initial game plan was. And I was getting to collaboratively talk with him about what some fun stories might be, which I was like super excited about. And the moment word came down that there was not going to be a third season on Cartoon Network, the book got canceled. Like, new episodes of the show were still airing when our last issue came out.
Dang.
Because you know DC basically just heard that the series was ending, and they like flipped the off switch. Which, you know, was frustrating because aside from, it would have been nice to do a few more issues, both in terms of like having a job last longer, and some of the ideas we were talking about would have been really fun to do. There's the lag time on, so when the show ended and it turned out there was this big fan base that really wanted it back. I mean, people were campaigning to bring back Young Justice for a long time before Outsiders finally happened. And, you know, Greg and I were pitching, you know, I was like, well, let us do the comic book.
Right.
We could continue the story forward in comic book form. And that's a much smaller investment than producing a season of animation. Plus, you know, it can come out so much faster. I mean, a season mm-hmm. of animation takes over a year to produce, whereas, you know, you can greenlight a comic book and have an issue on the stands in 4 months.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and so we were like, well, let us do season three in comic book form, or you know, when the show's back, let's have the comic book come out in between seasons to keep the fans engaged during the long wait. And and for some reason, that's a harder sell than I would think it would be. I would think that would be a license to print money, but
yeah,
you
know.
Yeah.
I'll as a comic consumer, I will continue to be baffled by decisions that comic companies make, because I always feel like whatever, like Marvel or DC or even to a lesser extent like Image or Dark Horse, I feel like whatever decisions they're making about their comics and their properties and how they're sold or canceled or started, I'm always like, wow, that seems dumb to me, but I'm sure there's someone that makes a lot more money than I that, you know, has marketing data or something.
Well, and I was going to say, I mean, part of what makes me curious about it is, like, I don't think that they exclusively hire stupid people to run these companies. They are clearly basing these decisions on variables that we're not looking at, because they're making decisions that, from, I think, the fan point of view, often, like, that makes no sense. I do not understand why they're doing that. And, you know, it could be some combination of they're in a bubble and there's things that they're not understanding about what the fan base wants. But it also could be, you know, they're seeing realities of market forces and right. feedback they're getting from retailers and things like that that we're not hearing. So yep. I don't know.
Yep.
So, so now you're working on the show.
Yes.
Are you still doing any comic work, or is that pretty much not something you can do anymore? Or are
not right? Not right now. I've done a few covers of things that haven't come out yet. The time commitment to do a comic, especially anything that has to be done on a book a month kind of schedule, would be rough.
Were you working on, I know you did some cards for us for Marvel LCG. Was that before you moved or after you moved?
Just before.
Yeah.
That helped pay for my move. Thank you very much.
Hey, you're welcome. that was my like thing I was going to make fucking happen. I was like, I am getting Chris Jones to do art for our goddamn game. I was so excited.
I know. I was excited too. You know, Fantasy Flight has... I mean, especially if you are local to the Twin Cities, it has kind of a disproportionately large footprint in the geek community there.
Yeah.
And like, I had never worked for them. And so it felt like a little bit of a tick mark of like, oh, that gets to come off the list. I've done at least a little bit of that.
Yay.
that was really fun to do.
You let me know if you have more time.
It's easier to make time for things that are a piece of art as opposed to, you know, 20 pages a month.
Yeah.
Especially because, you know, you never know. It's hard to predict how much extra time I'm going to have well in advance.
Sure.
It's a collaborative storytelling. I mean, versus we need this specific one thing.
Yeah. Although, you know, part of the fun of what I'm doing right now is learning how much of the skill set of doing comics transfers over. I mean, the specific details are surprising and interesting. Generally, it's kind of what I expected, where, like, if you imagine the Venn diagram of the skills and abilities it takes to be effective as a comic book artist versus doing anything on the drawing part of animation, there's a lot of overlap in those circles, but they're not identical circles. A lot of it's just been learning the software. Because, as you can imagine, everything's being done digitally. So it's all drawing in computer programs and you know, day one of the job and showing up and like, okay, here's the program you're going to be working with. And I've never seen this software before in my life, let alone, you know, even drawing digitally. I just switched to working mostly digitally for my comic book art.
Yeah.
2 or 3 years ago. And that was being done on a iPad Pro using one piece of software and switching from that to Cintiq.
Oh yeah.
That's really different. It's kind of getting used to the whole drawing on the screen thing all over again.
Yeah.
Let alone the specifics of the software. So
that's really cool.
I had people that were like trying to be very encouraging, like, oh, you're gonna kill it. This is you know, your drawing is great, it's Young Justice. Like, thank you. And I think it'll be fine, and I appreciate the encouragement, but you are completely ignoring the steep learning curve I know I have ahead of me. And it's that steep learning curve that's terrifying me a little bit right now.
That was me when I switched to being Yeah, when I switched to being a producer from being in sales, and I was like, okay, no, this will be good. And then it was like, okay, so here, learn InDesign. It was like, okay.
Did so that it sounds like that was one aspect of getting used to getting into the new job, and then you know that combining with a move. What are your big like culture shock? Like bullet points as far as like new job, new state, new city. Like what have been some of the things that have been?
I had visited LA a number of times before, but I'd never been out here for as long as a week previously. And I hadn't been out here ever with my own vehicle. I had a rental car a couple of times, but then I was staying at a hotel. It was definitely an experience learning how horrifically awful the parking situation is out here. There's a lot of streets that are narrow enough with parking on both sides that you feel like this ought to be a one-way. It's not a one-way.
Oh, like Aldrich or 29th.
Winter in South Minneapolis.
Yeah.
And I'm somebody who I am at my most comfortable when the weather is in the, say, mid to low 60s.
It never really is that way in LA, is it?
In winter, yeah.
Does it get cold? I hear it actually gets pretty cold in LA.
Well, cold by California standards.
Sure. You know,
I moved out here mid-December, and you know it was in the 60s, and they were having a rare bout of a lot of rain. I drove into Los Angeles in a freaking downpour, like hard to see the road.
Yeah, that's
downpour.
Rare.
Is not normal. This is not normal at all. And it was I knew moving out here that it was going to be hot a lot of the time. I figured I was trading Minnesota, where you spend the winter going quickly from heated environment to heated environment, to living to in a place where I was going to go from air-conditioned environment to air-conditioned environment.
It's the same.
The trade-off is that here I never have to scrape ice off the windshield of my car or shovel or any of those things.
Or worry about like where you're going to stuff your winter coat when you go see a movie, assuming one could go see a movie.
What about earthquakes? Have there been earthquakes?
I have noticed one small earthquake since I was here. I know there's been more than one. There was back when we were still working at the office, at the studio, there was one day I came in that people were all asking each other if they felt the earthquake, and I hadn't. But you know, it's really hard. Like a small one, it's like, well, if it happens when you're driving in the car or if asleep or, you know, depending on the timing. The one I noticed, I was sitting here at my desk, and it literally felt like somebody walked behind me and like bumped the chair.
Oh, sure.
Oh,
it was about that severe.
I imagine and it's just kind of a little. Yeah.
And it was disorienting because I live alone and don't have pets. So it's sort of like, well, either it's a ghost or and literally in the time it took my brain to process, oh, this is an earthquake, which is about like 1 second, you know, it's like, oh, and then it was done. And that was it.
Yeah.
And the one thing that was frustrating is I immediately tried to look up online, like what it was on the seismic scale.
Richter scale.
Thank you. And the thing I discovered was you can find a map that shows where the epicenter was and what it measured on the Richter scale there. But when the epicenter is several miles from you, mm-hmm. I wasn't finding any convenient way to find out. Yeah, but where I was.
The shockwaves, like what were they?
By the time it reached me, what had the Richter scale measurement dropped to? And then I haven't figured out a convenient way to find out yet. Because I just, out of curiosity, it's nice to know. It's like, oh,
right.
So that thing I felt, how bad was that?
Yeah. That's cool.
But
I imagine everyone at work talking about the earthquake is like all the Minnesotans being like, oh, did you hear the thunderstorm last night? Oh, yeah, woke me up. Oh, I slept right through it.
I love thunderstorms. That's big thing I'm going to miss out here is the thunderstorms.
Well,
we've had
Minnesota,
a few lately. Sorry, buddy.
Yes.
Minnesota misses you.
Man.
Chris,
yeah, I totally thought I was going to be back to visit like at least once by now, if not twice.
Does come back for SpringCon?
Yeah.
Going to come back for SpringCon, and certainly I was going to be back for Convergence. And you know, when it was becoming clear that the conventions were likely getting canceled or delayed, I was still thinking, well, I'll use my vacation time and just come out and visit folks. And I still don't feel like we're at a point where I think that the airplane travel is
neither do we
worth the risk.
Good call.
That's smart. Smart.
Yeah. Awesome. Like if you were going to drive, I guess, but why would you drive
having driven out this way, although
the majority of your vacation would just be getting here and back.
Yeah. The thing that was frustrating about coming out here was I made the drive out here thinking I was in a mad dash to get here ahead of the truck that had my furniture.
Okay.
There was a scheduled date when that was supposed to arrive.
Yeah.
And because of the weirdness of my schedule, I packed up my stuff, sent it off on this truck, went to the Chicago TARDIS convention over Thanksgiving, came back, did the final cleanup on my apartment, thankfully got help from some friends to finish the final cleanup on my apartment because I was not going to be done by when I had to leave.
Yeah.
So thank you, friends. And then get on the road and then try to get out here ahead of that truck. And as it turned out, the truck was hugely late and I could have taken all the time I wanted, which is all the more frustrating given that like I came so close to the Grand Canyon at one point when we made a stop for supplies and gas, it was at a place that was branded for, you know, to lure in tourists for the Grand Canyon. But we're like, yeah, we don't have time. We got to be back in the road. So like, it was just drive like 3 days, like as fast as you can make the trip, stopping to sleep at night.
That's bummer.
So it was like for somebody that does not enjoy being in cars for long periods of time and doesn't like to drive for more than about 4 hours at a time, it was like all the worst parts of a road trip.
Oh my God.
Without being able to enjoy the best parts. Although that said, you know, we got to drive through the mountains and I got to see all kinds of amazing scenery and it was gorgeous. It just would have been nice to like stop and see more of it.
Yeah.
It's pretty and you could have wracking.
Yeah, and you just didn't know it.
Could have, but did not.
Awesome. Chris, this has been awesome. Thank you so much for talking with us about how things are going out there for you and a little bit about Young Justice Outsiders, you know, but not too much. but now it's time for our five questions.
Five questions.
These will be nice and easy. Molly, nice, you want to start us off with
Number one? Yeah. Question number one. What conspiracy theory do you find the most interesting or compelling? That is to say, your favorite. It doesn't mean you have to believe in it.
Yeah, I mean, there's so many, and certainly there's so many weird political ones these days. I mean, the way I feel about most of them is I'm like, that feels so much more far-fetched than what the actual likely truth is. I don't know why you believe that's more likely.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I think my favorite is probably all the stuff around Area 51, just because while I think that alien life and alien visitation of Earth is completely theoretically possible, I get very skeptical of any given instance of it that you hear about reported. So I feel like, could something have landed here? Possibly. Do I think it did? Probably not. But I think something went on that the government helped engineer all of this media confusion around as a deflection.
Sure.
Yeah.
So I don't know what it was about. I don't assume that, you know, they found a gray alien and did the alien autopsy. And all that stuff. I mean, I think it's more likely that, like, you know, top secret testing of prototype designs and it was getting noticed and they just wanted a cover story so that when someone saw something, they could say, well, that's obviously a crazy person.
You know what happened? Someone traveled in time.
Oh.
Someone traveled in time. They went so fast, traveled in time, made it aliens.
Was it the Ferengi from Deep Space Nine?
In search of females.
Tim, why don't you handle the next one?
Sure, Chris. What is your ideal 2-week vacation? Money is no object, but physics is a limiting factor.
You know, I might have struggled more at a different time to answer that one. Right now, I so would love to just be somewhere that I can hang out with people. All the conventions I'm getting to this year are my biggest regret of all of them is not missing on seeing friends, but missing the environment where you can shake hands with somebody or give a hug to somebody and not have to worry about it. With all the isolation here at Fort Art Cave, if I could be in that kind of convention center hotel setting where it was filled with friends I already knew and geeks and fans of similar persuasion that I would want to meet. Mm-hmm. That just would feel heavenly right now.
So since money is no object, you could pay all of your friends to put themselves in quarantine for 2 weeks.
After that two weeks period,
everyone goes to a hotel that you've rented out, and you get to have a private convention where you know everyone that's there has been in quarantine strictly for 2 weeks.
I'm liking this plan.
Also, your apartment should be called either the Fortress of Artitude or the Fortress of Sala Art.
I like the Fortress of Artitude.
What about the art cave?
The art cave,
Yeah.
Question number three. What's a movie or a book that changed your life and how or why?
Again, there's a lot of things I could pick as far as, you know, movies that were meaningful to me or books of fiction or nonfiction. The one that leads to mind, though, as far as just, you know, I can trace a deflection point before having read it and after having read it. So if you are interested in doing comic book art, there's a lot of books that have come out over the years trying to tell you how to do it. You know, DC has a whole line of them. There's a ton of drawing for comics books. But the earliest one I ever saw came out when I was a kid, How to Draw Comics the Marvel Way, was such a great primer, not only for basic drawing things, skills like, you know, constructing a form out of
anatomy,
geometric shapes and how many heads tall a body is and things like that.
I love that book.
But it also spoke in like perspective and things like that. But it also spoke to the idea of that you would exaggerate things for dramatic effect for comic book art. That, like, you know, here's a realistic way you might draw someone. Here's the comic book version, which is like larger than life and the body language is bigger and all that. And I think that was like a new concept to me at the time. Like, oh, you exaggerate and make it broader because it's a line drawing and one, you can get away with it. It doesn't look as goofy when it's a line drawing and not a real person, but also you're using that exaggeration to compensate for not having the nuances of an actor's performance or something you might have in a different medium.
Sure. So, and you can convey motion and things like that in a still image with.
Yeah. For all the books I've seen that have come along later that have maybe gone into more detail or get into more technical stuff. That still is like about as good as I've seen.
Nice.
Cool. Question four. What is the geekiest thing you've ever done or said?
This could take a while.
Yes, Chris Jones, who has drawn for DC Comics.
there are a lot of things I could choose between. There's a story I love about the geekiest conversation I ever had, but in the interest of time, the shorter story is the geekiest thing I've ever done. Possibly was I'd gotten a package in the mail that I was trying to open, and rather than go into the kitchen to grab a knife to cut the tape and open the box that way, I had it in my living room, and I had a replica Batarang on a display by my television. So I took the Batarang and used it to cut the box open, not remembering what it was I had ordered.
Oh God.
That would be showing up at that time, and what was inside was another batarang.
Yeah, that counts. That counts. Yeah. That counts. That's good.
Delightful.
Oh my God.
All right, Tim, why don't you take it home with question five?
Sure, Chris. What is your favorite hangover cure?
This is very anticlimactic, given that I don't think I've ever had a hangover. I drink so rarely and so little.
Look at Chris. He's an adult.
I don't really have a good one for that one.
That's fine.
That's okay. That's basically my answer.
Yeah.
I mean, I think hangover cure, I always think it was Back to the Future 3 where Doc Brown was passed out and they had the concoction that.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
They did.
It's probably cocaine.
Thankfully, I've never done one of those.
Kicks it just like that.
Well, I'm in the right town for it.
Yeah. No shit.
There you go.
You ever hoovered that LA sheep?
In fact, the white wall behind you is entirely made up of cocaine.
Exactly.
They build walls out of cocaine in LA.
That's load-bearing coke.
Wow.
You can't sniff that.
That's the original pitch for the American Tail was not the streets are paved with cheese, but that they're paved with coke.
Cocaine.
That
makes it. Mice love it.
Mice love
they
coke.
They love fucking
little,
love
little,
it.
Little known fact.
So that sounds like more of a Ralph Bakshi thing.
Yeah, maybe.
It really does.
Maybe.
It really does. Awesome. Delightful. Well, Chris, it's always a pleasure to have you on. We're all super looking forward to seeing your fingerprints on Young Justice season 4 when that comes out. Oh,
thank you.
We'll totally love to have you on again sometime. But otherwise,
once it comes out, we'll get you back on and we'll ask you what you actually did.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
It was great to do the show, and it was great to talk to all of you guys, my friends.
Yeah. Good to
good
see you.
Your face.
Missed you so much.
We've been Geeks Without God. You can find new episodes up every Tuesday. We haven't missed one yet. If you are a Patreon supporter, you can listen to all these episodes weeks early, because we record a couple at a time. And if you throw us a couple bucks extra, you can actually like watch video of our Zoom recorded remote episodes. And we actually have a new Patreon supporter.
Hot damn!
Friend of the guest, Dr. Love, is...
Yeah, Dr. Love!
Dr. Love!
Laura's a supporter on Patreon. We're going to reach out to her and send her some stickers and stuff.
She's our house epidemiologist.
Which is great. It's always good to have her on to talk about science debunking and epidemiology and stuff. But you could get some stickers from us, too, if you chip us, like, $5. We'll get your address from you and ship you out some rainbowy Geeks Without God stickers.
What a bargoon.
Otherwise, you can always just find us on Apple Podcasts or Google Play and what have you, Stitcher. And, of course, we'll see you next Tuesday.
Bye.
Remember, everything Chris didn't say about Young Justice Season 4 is a secret.
We're geeks, we're geeks without God. We're geeks without God. We don't recognize moral authority. We don't accept divine superiority. We're geeks, geeks without God.
Until next time, you can find us blogging and listen to past podcasts at geekswithoutgod.com. And you can follow us on Twitter at geekswithoutgod.
We're geeks.
We're geeks.
We're geeks without God.
We're geeks.
We're geeks.
We're geeks without God.
We're geeks. Geeks without God.
If they show up, we're going to tell you what you need to know.